honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. At the end of a week in which all over this great country of ours, communities rallied again around those who have given so much. And in some places, it marked a return to in-person Veterans Day ceremonies after celebrating the occasion in virtual fashion last year. The story we just heard from Niall Smith, who just turned 99 years old and is still driving, by the way, is one of those that is just hard to understand, hard to fathom. When he spoke to the students at Fresno Christian School this past week, he said adrenaline is what helped him and another survivor of that crash lift a 500-pound radar dome off of another survivor and help him to safety. Niall is still carrying shrapnel from that incident on April 12, 1944, but unlike other survivors, he was not sent back to the States, and that turned out to be a very fortunate development.
About every 10 days on the base there, we get a two-day pass and go down to London, like two or three of us go together. And that's what we did all during the war. But then the V-2s started coming in, the rockets.
Yeah.
They go up about 50 miles, and then they come straight down. And there's no warning or
right.
anything else.
You don't hear the putt, putt, putt.
Well, that was the buzz bomb, that putt,
yeah.
putt. But I was in London. This was, I guess it would be about August or something, August. One of those rockets hit about a block away from where I was. I was on the sidewalk, and the concussion threw me back against a brick wall, and I was off the ground about a foot, and I couldn't move.
Holy moly.
And there was people out in the street there that it killed. So I said to myself, this is the last time I'm going to London. I'm going someplace else, because I'm not dealing with these V-2s. So then I went up and started going to Scotland. They're going, you know, and that's how I met my wife.
Well, tell me the story. I mean, it's a lot to go through to have to meet your wife, you know, surviving this horrible plane crash when you're shot down and then almost getting killed by a V-2, and that's what it takes to send you her direction, huh?
I guess so.
How'd you meet her?
Well, about September of 44, I started going to Scotland. That's 400 miles from where the base was, and it's not like the train is now. The train does, I think, in about 4 hours. But you had to ride all night on that train from England to Edinburgh. And if there's an air raid, they stopped train, pulled mm-hmm. everything off. So it was all night journey up there. So I started going up there. And I don't know if it's the first visit or the second visit. Like every 2 weeks, we get time off. I went down to this, they call it the Palais de Danse. It was a big ballroom. And I saw her standing up there and... She was up on, I think, a balcony, and I kept looking at her, and I don't know if she was looking at me or not. Anyway, I went up and asked her to dance, and that's how we met.
You must have decided pretty quickly then that she was the one, because you guys got married while you were still over there. The war wasn't even over yet.
That's right. We got married in December. Yeah, it was quick. And we could only see each other every 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
see?
Yeah, so much for a honeymoon, right?
Yeah, we didn't have much of a honeymoon. Yeah, we went back down to where the base was, and I think we were in Norwich one night.
So how much longer were you over there?
Well, I was over there until the war ended May the 8th, 45. There's a story about that, too.
Let's hear it.
Okay, the day before, I had a buddy that worked up in personnel, and he came down and saw me. He says, hey, the war is going to be over tomorrow. I'm married by then, see. If you want to pass and you want to get out of here, you get your pass and get out, because they're throwing the restriction on the base. Nobody gets on or off when the announcement is made. So I got my pass, and Phyllis and I were sitting in the theater in Edinburgh when Churchill came on the screen and announced the war was over.
Huh.
And here's all these other guys back at the base.
Was there a big cheer in the theater when that announcement was made?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I didn't tell anybody what I knew or anything, see, but I think people kind of knew it was going to happen.
Getting close.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there any concern on your part that you might be sent to the Pacific?
I was supposed to be going to the Pacific.
What happened?
Well, see, the war was over. Then I don't know what happened to our outfit, but I had so many points. They had started a point system, and because of, maybe my medal had something to do with it, but I had enough points that I'd get sent back early to the state. But I was already on, I didn't have the orders, but I was told that I was going to be assigned to the 20th bomb group or whatever it was, the B-29s in the Pacific, and to go out there. But I came back in August of 45 and got a 30-day leave. And while I was on leave, the war ended. So I didn't have to go. So then I got out then.
Was that a pretty big relief to you to know that the world was no longer at war?
Yeah, I didn't have to go. Didn't have to go to the Pacific because I didn't want to go to the Pacific. You'd go, but I didn't want to go.
Well, you had a wife to worry about now, too.
Yeah.
What was it like to be back home in America and to be introducing your war bride to all your family and friends?
It's something to start with, and then you just kind of get used to it. Everybody, you know, gets used to it. She didn't come right away, but she came in March of 46 before she came.
Uh-huh.
And she came on the Queen Mary, the first Queen Mary.
Uh-huh.
And here's, I don't know how many thousands of war brides up there. We stayed in New York for several months, aunt and aunt in New York, until we went to Illinois.
You know, so many people today don't know that much about World War II. It's so long ago now, and maybe people don't appreciate what the world was like or what it took to win that war. When you think about it, what gives you the most pride or the most satisfaction about what you did and all those other guys you knew did?
We did a job we had to do. I'd do it again, just like Vietnam. I didn't want to go to Vietnam, because that was a war zone too. But I went, and here's all other people trying to get out of it. But I went, you do your duty, you know, you go.
What'd you do over there?
I was first sergeant. This was a transport squadron. We had the planes, and many carried supplies back and forth, and I was at Cameron Bay. The Viet Cong tried to get in there. One night, they almost got clear in. They had three perimeters of defense around every base. And on the last defense, they had their dogs out there, say, police dogs. And they got clear into almost inside. The Viet Cong, I'm talking about, before they killed them. I wasn't in the fighting or anything, but the Marines and the Army were there. Another fellow and me, we were up there looking at some of the Viet Cong that didn't kill, and this guy beside me, hell, I know that guy. He's one of the barbers in the barber shop here.
Wow.
So
that gets your attention. And was that any different for you, knowing that you had a wife and daughter back home while you were in Vietnam?
You think about it, but you don't worry about it. Something could happen. I mean, it could even happen on the way or on the way back or something, but or any place.
I've got a few more questions for you, and if there's anything I didn't touch on, I want to hear about it. But I'm just reflecting on that day in April of 1944 when this crash happens. And I guess the one thing, before I read your citation and ask you a couple other things, I'm just thinking about it, and I'm thinking of everyone at home listening, and they're saying, he wasn't supposed to be on this plane. He volunteers. He's on it. It almost claims his life. It did kill three others and severely wound all these other guys. He doesn't get to come home. He has to stay over there. If he doesn't, he's never going to meet his wife. His daughter's never going to be born. His three grandkids and five great-grandkids aren't going to be here.
Yeah.
It's a pretty incredible story. How do you make sense of all that? What do you credit for the way it all happened?
That's just the way the world is, I guess. Strange things happen all the time, or things happen you don't expect to happen, but that's the way it goes.
Is it something that you just say, well, that's luck, or do you think there was somebody up there pulling the strings for you, or what do you think?
I think there was that night. Yeah. It wasn't my time to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
You mentioned the pilot coming to you in the hospital and thanking you for saving his life. So there were all these other survivors. There were, nine survivors and three killed. Did you ever, after the war and all the years passed, have any contact with any of those other guys?
No, I haven't. I haven't.
I wonder if any of the rest of them are still living.
I don't know.
Maybe we can find that out.
There's not too many left anymore, you know.
That's the reason we do this show. Exactly. So we can know these stories. And I'm so grateful for you sharing it. Let me read this. This is what the government said about Sergeant, at that time, Corporal Niall Smith of the Army Air Forces. For heroism not in action against the enemy, displayed at a bomber base in England, 12 April 1944, when the plane in which Sergeant Smith was flying crashed into a field, 3 crew members were killed and 9 others, including Sergeant Smith, were injured. Despite his painful injuries and the imminent danger of the plane exploding, Sergeant Smith helped the co-pilot remove the pilot and other injured crew members. The plane blew up shortly afterwards. The bravery and utter disregard for personal safety displayed by Sergeant Smith on this occasion helped save the lives of the injured officers and men. His actions reflect the highest credit upon himself and the armed forces of the United States, and they awarded you the Soldier's Medal. Hearing that, thinking back to that, what does that mean to you, that they recognized what you did was something special?
Well, that means a lot. I mean, you know, it's just something that, you did your job and you did what you could. And I think most of the guys in the service were that way, too. Even when you read stories about Afghanistan or Iraq, wherever, you have a bunch of buddies, you know, and you're all for each other. You're protecting each other.
Amen. And the one thing that jumped out at me as I read this, and I'm sure you don't pull this out every week and look at it, but the first sentence there, they say, for heroism, not in action against the enemy. Well, your mission wasn't against the enemy, but it was an enemy plane that
shot
you down.
That's right.
I wonder if they re-examined this, if they'd say something different. And I showed you, too, something else that I found. There's a record of the German pilot who shot you down, and he was the same age as you, 21, shot down 4 Allied planes within a 2-week span and then died in a mid-air collision about 2 weeks after he shot you guys down. What's that like to know the other side and to hear about this man who almost ended your life?
That's something that's hard to believe, you know. If you had met him someplace or somebody you could have known, you know.
Sure.
I mean, he was doing his job. It's like you've heard stories about the two pilots, I don't know, it was American or British pilot and German pilot. They were going back from England to France, and they crossed each other or passed each other, and both of them were out of ammunition.
Right.
And they waved each other. Yeah.
So there wasn't a whole lot of animosity on your part, necessarily.
No, he's doing his job. That's just like the flight crews. I mean, here you are, you're in a bomber, and you know that the bombs you're dropping, there's going to be civilians killed and everything else. And the flight crew, I've heard them talking, they say, well, that's just something we have to do. That's our job.
Mm-hmm. And the 3 men that died in the crash that could have claimed your life, did you know any of them at all, or were they complete strangers to you because you had just volunteered?
Well, they were all strangers to me because that was another crew.
Yeah.
I just volunteered to help this other crew, this guy or a buddy. I took his place. So I didn't actually know him.
And you mentioned right in the immediate aftermath how you did have some of those flashbacks and the dreams about it. Have you had any problems with that in all the years since?
No, not really, no.
Have you ever caught yourself thinking about it and saying, man, that could have been me? I could have
been
one.
Yeah, you think about it once in a while.
Where does that lead you?
Well, it doesn't lead me anywhere. I never expected to live this long. Can't live forever.
No. Well, Niall, I just want to say thank you for serving our country for those, what did you say, 22 years, how many days?
2 months and 6 days. You never forget that either.
I don't think there's very much that Niall Smith forgets. And there's someone else who hasn't forgotten that crash at the Earl of Cranbrook's estate in England on April 12th, 1944. The 5th Earl of Cranbrook. He was just 11 years old at the time. He wasn't the Earl yet, his father was, but he woke up to the aftermath and that devastating scene. At the start of the pandemic, we were able to make the Earl of Cranbrook aware of Niall and his story, and the Earl actually issued an invitation for Niall Smith to return there and visit the scene and meet the Earl. Because of the pandemic, that hasn't happened yet, but perhaps it will before Niall turns 100 next November. And if it were up to me, there's something else I would love to see happen. Maybe there's somebody listening right now who can help make this happen. But since there is so much evidence that this was enemy action, that a German fighter pilot named Wolfgang Wenning shot down that American bomber, the award of the Soldier's Medal for a non-combat situation, as prestigious and significant as that decoration is, really was not the correct award to give this aircraft mechanic who saved so many lives that day. Similar heroics have been recognized with the Silver Star, the Distinguished Flying Cross, or even the Medal of Honor. And maybe, just maybe, that discrepancy will get rectified while Niall is still with us. If you think you can help, let me know. Thank you so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. Once again, if you'd like to meet Niall and some more incredible veterans of World War II this next week, go to hometownheroesradio.com for all the information on that Thursday, November 18th lunch at the Clovis Veterans Memorial District in Clovis, California. Or that number to call is 559-225-5095. And I can't say goodbye without saying it one more time. Whether it's Veterans Day or any day, freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.